If you would like to ask a question of the panel, please line up at the floor mic on your right over there. And again, keep in mind that the audio from today's program will be posted on the Sea Ranch website, and video will be available as well. And I wanted to mention that we now have about 250 people with us online, so the audience is growing for this fascinating program. As I mentioned earlier, in February, the association will be organizing a member workshop where we can discuss and apply our speaker's thinking to our vision of a changing Sea Ranch. Today, therefore, I ask that you frame your questions as two questions, true questions to the panel, not statements of your own experience or observation. Please limit your questions to 1 minute and wait to ask another until after everyone who wishes to ask a question has had a turn. And do give your name, because we may not be able to get you in our web feed. I mean, I don't think we can get all of us in, so we may not see you, but it'd be nice to know your name. So we have scheduled an hour, and we'll go until quarter after four, or until there are no more questions, whichever comes first. I'd like to begin, actually, by asking a question of the audience. How many people in the audience are not Sea Ranchers? If you could raise your hands, what we could see. Oh, there are actually quite a few. Well, yeah, some. Okay, put your hands down. How many are what Rob calls locals, from our local area, but not a Sea Rancher? There's Jake. Okay, well, Jake, we're paying you to be here, please. So that's kind of interesting. I find that very interesting, because we did at the beginning advertise this in the ICO, it very quickly filled up, so we didn't advertise it again exactly, except to have it in the calendar in a very minimal way. But it strikes me it might be interesting to do something like this across the river, because one thing that I think our speakers, well, there's no way they would be aware of it, because we had so little time to show them around the Sea Ranch. We're actually part of a larger community, which includes Gualala across the river. We're very, very closely tied with them. And in fact, we have a wonderful arts center there, right across the river. It's a beautiful setting, and built I wouldn't say large part, but it would not have happened without the Sea Ranchers who worked on it and gave their volunteer time. And I'm just thinking it might be quite interesting to do something like this there. And, you know, we would necessarily get opinions, you know, broader. And also, Gualala and our surrounding area is quite diverse. We couldn't ask for more. And so, you know, we might look closer to home. So I guess, you know, there's no way you would have said that because you weren't aware of the bigger picture, but I know that there are many in the audience who want to make this point, so I thought I would make it before I asked for questions from the audience. So first question.
I'm Richard Carlisle, civil engineer and surveyor, and I spent 50 years on the Sea Ranch. I was lucky enough to be a young engineer 50 years ago and trail behind all these wonderful designers, looking at their sketches and trying to make it work from an engineering surveying standpoint. So I have as Donlin knows, I have 100 stories to tell, but I do have one that just knocks my socks off.
But is it a question, Richard?
There is a question at the end.
Okay. And put that lilt at the end. Okay.
But I had to lead into this. I have a son that lives in Milan, Italy. And my wife and I went over to visit him. This was 12 years ago. And he was lucky enough to get us a villa on Lago Maggiore. And the local architects, the Italian, would be equivalent to the AIA, Italian architects were doing a tour of villas on Lago Maggiore. And they had occupied one of them. And I said, I got to get over there and look at that one, because that has a lot of stuff in it, probably. So I went over there, got on the bottom, and they said, well, we're busy right now. We can't do that. But you can go ahead and look upstairs in the upper floor of the villa. I was blown away.
Okay, Richard, we need your question because you're already over time here.
Square footage of that was an exhibit of the Sea Ranch.
Oh.
All done in design, all done with models, studies, more than I'd ever seen in 50 years, all in Italian. So my question is, how do we, the world is out there studying the Sea Ranch. Believe me, this was students and the Italian architects. How do we enhance what you have all said, that the world, how do we bring the students in? How do we bring studies? How do we create a center here where we can show what wonderful things have happened here?
Okay, thanks. Good question. Does anybody have any concrete ideas? I know this is kind of your idea. Are your mics working? No? Yeah, they are. Well, that one is. Yeah.
Are they working? They're working?
This is not my idea. No. This is what others on the panel have said. But I think you should establish a relationship, if the community cares, with an architecture school and begin to try to do a summer program here. I think that's one of the best ideas I heard today. And one of them should be about using the students to take inventories and surveys on which you would base, you know, future planning and conversation.
Richard, I want to shake your hand because I have his name right here. I heard rumor he was going to be here. So thank you for being sympathetic, because it's not just the great landscape architects, civil engineer with his sensibility and energy I was told about. So that's great. But back to this idea of the sort of involvement, this idea of surveys. You have an empty building up by the airport. We walked that building 2 days ago at breakfast when we did go up to the little pastry shop up there. It could provide lodging. It could provide studios. It could be a great indoor-outdoor thing. So you have an armature for a potential, and we have talked to some of the people from Cal. There's other places to reach. Cal's an easy reach. Woodbury's an easy reach. I think you can make this happen with very little downside to yourself and really start the conversation, and everybody could get involved, I mean, with making this mapping and making these things at the start, but then just getting onto it. I had another one of your citizens come up to me and say, what about co-housing? Do you know anything about that? Would that be good? Talk about a wonderful continuation of what happened at Condominium 1. It doesn't have to be a condominium. What about a co-housing thing where, again, you get a whole other thing working? It'd be a perfect idea.
I have to say, though, a couple people came up. Is this working? A couple people came up to me during the break and said that, you know, they like things the way they are. Maybe they didn't want to be in a fishbowl and have, as one person put it to me, tour buses of visitors from the outside world coming to a museum. So I think there is clearly some resistance to these ideas, and for good reason. And the status quo here is extraordinarily beautiful. But I think what you have to remember, and what we've been trying to talk about in looking back to the origins of this place, is that this place worked not just because it's so rooted to the landscape, but because it brought in ideas that were absolutely current from all over the world. And the architects who helped found this place, and the landscape architects, were really thinking about a dialogue between those larger ideas that were in the air in the 1960s and this specific place and its landscape. And I think if your concern is, as is natural and as happens in beautiful places all over the world, how to protect it, then you begin to need to worry about provincialism and protecting it so much that these new ideas can't come in, and it becomes, as others have said, a kind of hermetic place or an insular place. And so striking that balance, I understand how difficult that is politically, but I think you need to be always thinking about ways to let some of that outside air and some of those outside ideas in without, of course, spoiling the original sort of ideals of the place.
Very good point. Anyone else have a comment about that? Thank you. Thank you for a good question. Carolyn Andre.
I have a comment and a question. You asked what people in the audience thought the biggest problem is with the Sea Ranch. And my guess is it's very different for all of us, particularly for full-timers versus part-timers. So I'm a full-timer, and this is the only place I've ever lived where you basically pray for a heart attack and to just drop dead at some point. Well, because there's no health care, and I don't want to move to Panorama or wherever people move to. So I also am on the board of a seniors organization, which runs for 60 miles up and down the coast. And we think all the time about aging in place and about having senior housing where you might be able to walk to a little village that had walking paths and so on. So do you guys have any ideas on how to do that? Anybody want to throw in your architecture skills or your building skills and help us do that? How would that happen?
I think that's part of the thing that we're trying not to tell anybody here what to do, but I think what all of us think is that if people...
But we'll do it anyway.
No, but that if you start by bringing in people to take, and young people are the perfect people, and students are perfect, with some knowledge to begin to survey and find out about these kinds of needs. And somebody came up to me and said, you know, you're almost like you need a demographer here, too, to really understand that. And the other thing, which I think Chris said, is why not begin to bring in some of the best minds in architecture today in the way that the best minds in architecture 50 years ago came and created this place, to come in and begin to listen to all of you and offer some potential solutions. You know, talk is not entirely free, but it's a start.
But in terms of aging in place, I was really struck a few times when we were taking the tour with Donlin that he said, you know, there didn't used to be a handrail here. We didn't think about handrails. This was a place that was created by young people, really, young architects and landscape architects who weren't necessarily thinking about that. And we sometimes forget now that we're 50 years down the line, but it was they were thinking forward rather than thinking about those questions. So I can see that they're really pressing going forward. And I wish you luck in grappling with those as you try to think about it.
Harrison Fraker.
Yes. So I've been very impressed with the talk about what to do about the future here. And I have two themes that I'd like to have the panel talk about. The first one has to do with what I think Larry's gift was besides the plan and the ideas behind the plan. It, when I got here as the dean of the college in 96 of environmental design at Berkeley, Walter Hood and I came to one of these rogue workshops that Larry gave to the landscape students, Linda. And there were some things that happened that were amazing. We were taken to one of these places, and Larry asked us to draw what we heard, to draw what we smelled, to draw what we could touch, and then he asked us to draw the process that made this place. And there's incredible wisdom in that for the landscape committee, because what's special about this place is its way it connects us to our sensory being, much more than the visual. The smell, I mean, I walked here this morning, the changes that take place along the coast, it is really transformative. That's what this place gives us. And the architecture that captures that then, and the architecture that captures that in the future, is what's going to, I think, stimulate the next generation. We even see little ghosts of it happening already. So that's one thing that I felt was undersold this morning. The second thing is everybody's talked about sustainability. And we have to be honest. This is not a sustainable community. Fundamentally, it is a cul-de-sac suburban community done in tremendous sensitivity with nature, but you get in your car to go anywhere, and you can't ride your bike.
So Harrison, what's your question?
So my question is, in the next 50 years, how are we going to make it sustainable?
I'd like to just start off by, I agree with Harrison in terms of, you know, when you, the actual layout, when you look back to when Larry Halperin was here in the early 1960s, this was an era when people didn't think about the kind of problems we're facing now. There wasn't a worry that if you drive too much, you're going to be sending hydrocarbons into the air. There was no concept of that. And so he did design it, you know, the way everything was designed in California in the early 1960s, with cul-de-sacs and dispersed housing and occupying, you know, it's amazing to me how much of the land is occupied by housing, you know, the footprint is occupied by housing, as compared to if you had built a little higher or denser. I don't think much can be done with the plan at this point. It'd be, you know, that would be a very radical idea to actually, you know, start transforming the plan. But I think there could be a second plan layered on to the first plan. In other words, there are sites that are strategically located, you know, either by the lodge or by the rec centers or by the airfield, where you could introduce much higher densities and you could create walking communities. In other words, places where people don't have to get in their car to do everything, that they could walk to get, you know, there could be a store, they could walk to get groceries, they could walk to the swimming pool, you know, they would be able to get out of the car and not use the car as much. So my sense is there would have to be that, what I think a lot of people have been saying here, a layer of thinking about the Sea Ranch, and it makes so much sense to use architecture students and, you know, to do that because they're free and they're young and they think really differently, and it would be I think you guys would be so invigorated to have like a group of them here for a summer. It would just be amazing. And to ask, you know, ask them just to come up with these ideas. Well, how could we plan for the future so that the community could become more sustainable over time? And that, you know, could we perhaps transform some of the areas that exist, you know, give them the parameters about how to do it, and then have a discussion with them at the end when they present their work. I think it would be very inspiring because, you know, I think what was coming up in the last couple of questions is the fact that I think what attracted all of you here was that this was not your everyday community. This was special. There was something different about Sea Ranch. And it did have an environmental aspect, and it did have an artistic, architectural aspect. You know, it wasn't every resort community. It was something very different. The question is, how do you keep that? You can't just keep that based on the legacy, because the legacy is not going to sustain it. It's going to, and especially over time, you know, Larry Halperin died a few years ago, and, you know, that takes away one voice. I mean, you're going to, you know, those early voices can't do it alone. You know, and I think there's a time to bring in some new voices to start a process of keeping a sense of the history and the reason you came here. What was the attraction? But you have to accept that it has to change, that the vision can't stay exactly the same. It just can't. Nothing does in this world. And the things that do in this world become a little bit staid. Not to say it's becoming staid, but anything that doesn't have a mechanism to grow and change and bring in new opinions and new voices is going to do that. And, you know, we wouldn't have thought 50 years about sustainability the way we're doing now. We've thought about pollution. That was the big buzzword 50 years ago. The earth is getting polluted, the air and water, which still have tremendous problems. But the issues now are, as we all know, much broader. They involve the very way we live. Right? Our daily routines. We have to change our daily routines. We all know this. You know, I think about this every time I get in an airplane. And we all have to do this. So, my students are so aware of it. I mean, they don't want to even get driver's licenses. I mean, they're just half of them. They're like, we don't need to drive. We don't want to drive. I think if there's one idea that comes out of today, which I think it's been mentioned by a lot of the speakers, is to have arrange some way, and students can actually they can sleep, and I had them on a tour, and they were sleeping four to a room. They're very flexible. So you don't have to worry about the accommodations as much as with us. You know, we're finicky and difficult. But I think a way, if there could be a summer institute, like run through one of the local architecture schools or a couple of the architecture schools, and bring a group of students and pose these fundamental questions about density, about sustainability, about public, you know, relationships to the external world, about legacy, and pose those questions and ask them to come up with some ideas. That would be a tremendous outcome, I think, because, you know, these are real issues.
Quickly, I was going to say that the challenge here is, surprisingly enough, the same challenge that Los Angeles writ large is struggling with right now, which is how to retrofit an essentially suburban, car-dominated, single-family dominated landscape for a different future. And I, as much as I love the idea of bringing students here, which I think could be tremendously helpful, what really struck me about Linda's presentation was the absolute rigor with which these people, particularly Larry Halperin, looked at this landscape. And I think what's needed now is the same kind of professional rigor looking at these problems anew with the same ambition. To tackle the, you know, the next 50 years. And it's not just about tweaks here or there. In some ways, it's a kind of fundamental reassessment of what this place is for, how people live here, what kind of people are attracted here, what kinds of architecture is built here, and so forth. And I think there needs to be a really rigorous conversation and examination of those set of questions.
Yeah, and actually those two are not in conflict, because I can imagine an international program where you could bring in an internationally experienced, knowledgeable, rigorous architect to do a workshop with students from one of the Bay Area, or more than one. You could have, you know, students could apply, and so you could actually combine those two.
Right. Or, you know, and the reason I was just advocating the students first is because I think what I think needs to happen is a lot of thinking before you hire that person, what kind of person you need to, if you're eventually that person would get hired. You know, if you would actually engage someone. There needs to be a lot of discussion about, well, what do we actually, you know, think?
And so research needs to be done first.
I think a lot of research needs to be done before you get to that point, because that's a big moment to get another Larry Halperin in here. I mean, there are people like him in the world who are thinking about these things, but it would be good to figure things out.
You could have a two-pronged process, it strikes me. And the other thing is, this is also really ripe once you get more information, knowledge, and you begin to develop some ideas of direction. Boy, is this ripe for international design competition. And then you get a whole lot more free ideas. If you can get, or somewhat free. I mean, you've got to pay people to be in a competition, but you could get some really provocative ideas and maybe come up with a plan.
I will say I do not support a competition. We need people that will listen to you, that are professionals, guiding students, working, whether it be their professors or other professionals. There has to be a whole database, because you don't know how good or bad you are until you ask probably tough questions that nobody wants to ask. Develop a survey to analyze the situation as it exists and really find the problems, just as Larry did when he hit the site. I mean, you had this passionate, crazy guy that was sleeping on beaches here for 2 years before he put a pencil to paper. He was doing his sketchbooks. He was looking at this thing. You need that passion. You won't get it from a competition. It's not about making somebody famous because they came here, you know, and worked on the master. We want somebody that really believes in your place. Carefully analyze where that is. You know, find that sort of soul to it.
And you also need someone who's of the age that Larry was when he did it.
I'm not denying that.
Yeah.
I mean,
how old was he? How old was Larry when he was?
29,
30, 34? No, he's older than that.
He was
45,
maybe.
Yeah,
a young man. Yeah, you were all that man.
Yeah, they were all young.
We all were once.
You need that.
You're
so different, the young man.
No, Larry must have been 45, I would think.
2018. Yeah. I mean, in 1918.
Linda would know.
I don't know.
He was born in 1918, so he was a little older than that. In his 40s, 45, early 40s.
45, yeah. That's 45, yeah.
That's when you practice enough that you can really lead.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good question, Harrison. That was good. Okay. And please give your name.
Hi, my name is Miranda Yule. I should start by saying that I'm a complete newbie here at Sea Ranch. My husband and I bought a place this past summer, and we're part-timers. And I just want to reassure you, there is a question at the end. We live in Berkeley most of the time, and in Berkeley we have farmers markets and lots of places to meet people, lots of places to get coffee, good coffee, wonderful shops and restaurants and, you know, many versions of Main Street and whatnot. That's not why we're here at Sea Ranch. And I don't come, we don't come from a design or architecture background. We came here for the unbuilt environment. We came here for lack of a better word, what people used to refer to as nature, and for the solitude and the quiet and the things that the previous questioner was talking about, the way the air smells in the morning or in the evening when the sun is going down. And and the little that I know about Sea Ranch and that I've learned over the past year is that, you know, it's not status quo, but it is a deep attachment to, in what is becoming, in a large part of the world, a disappearing landscape, and the way in which the people who founded Sea Ranch got it right, as many of you point out. So, but I understand the, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, but the comments you were making about the need for more energy and more conversation about the experience at Sea Ranch, and I'm wondering if as non-design professionals, you can suggest ways to do that, which is not just bring in architecture students or bring in designers and people who will help you think about what kind of buildings to build, but maybe focusing on the issue of sustainability, which is a critical one for our time and which, you know, was the impetus for a lot of the design 50 years ago. Maybe the way is not to look forward into the tech future, but to look back. I would be very interested in hearing from the wisdom of, for instance, in talking about diversity, Native American groups there is a long tradition which goes back more than 50 years about sustainability. And so conversations at a very high level, but with a broader diversity of people than architects in academia. And mm-hmm. I wonder if you have
that's a good,
suggestion.
Very good, whatever it was, question, comment. Does anybody have a response?
Well, I would just say that related to that is the set of workshops that Harrison was referring to actually were designed, as was Anna's much shorter one, for the specific purpose of getting people to pay more attention to what was around them, to try to draw more experience out of what was around them, and that to have us have more programs where we accept that, in fact, we're all slightly diminished in our awareness of what's happening in the environment, and can increase that so as to increase the way in which we use the place so other people can come and use that to have a richer set of experiences. And then those become part of what it takes. One of the things it takes to be sustainable is for people to love it and to get to know it and to realize that they're really a part of something larger. And that realization, I think, is something we ought to continue to be providing, and that there are steps being taken towards that. But the prod to do that in a more expansive way is a good one.
I'd just like to say I've just read not nearly as much as I think a lot of other people on the panel, but Larry and Anna Halperin were very involved in the early days, aren't I right, Donlin, with the Native American community?
Yes,
that was still here.
To be.
Still
was,
are.
Continue
Anna
to be.
Still is.
Yeah.
And that was very much part of the early days. So there's a real history with that here, and I think you make an excellent point. The other point I'd just like to make is that it's a little bit of a defense of the profession of architecture, and I'm not an architect, but I do think architecture and design are a way of looking at the world to think about the world and think about a very wide range of issues. And I would never say that anybody should only bring in architects, but I think the idea of bringing in a broad range of thinkers who think about this kind of place, and it could include design students, it could not, but some of the best design problems today are done by teams that involve people from design, but also people from other professions, geographers, obviously here, people who might be experts in the environment and sustainability, you know, a whole kind of team approach, not to come in and say you should build a lot more buildings, but to come in and, as I think we've all been saying, and listen. And, you know, the idea of sustainability is not just to make things green, but as Donlin was saying, it's to extend the life of this community, not exactly as it's always been, but kind of based on the principles in which it was founded. And I think that takes, you know, a tremendous amount of soul-searching, planning, and thinking going forward.
I think it's a great, I mean, I just want to caution, I mean, you know, we bring up, you know, learning from the past and learning from the Native American peoples who have lived in this region, but I think I want to caution that, you know, we have to think about the way we live, the infrastructure we rely on, and or infrastructures that make our lives possible, you know, the water systems, the gasoline and electric power grids, you know, the internet cables and telephone cables. You know, we are, the way we live, the environment we live in is wholly artificial. No matter how much we think this is we're living in this natural place. I wonder how many of you live without this infrastructure, you know, forsake the infrastructure entirely, you know, and get here independent of gasoline and, you know, or freeways and, you know, have illumination independent of the power grid and, you know, independent of the communication systems and the information systems. What needs to be done is a thinking, how do we take this infrastructure that supports this artificial life in this beautiful place, which is, you know, I mean, if you think about it, one of the points I didn't make this morning that I could have made was that resort communities of resorts didn't start until the 18th century because it wasn't safe. The countryside was dangerous in most of the world. It was unpatrolled. There were bandits, brigands. And but it was true. You didn't go out at night. You didn't go through the forest. And people feared nature. In general, nature was seen kind of as a scary thing. And it really was the modernization and the development of modern infrastructure that allowed nature to become pacified to the extent to which we could inhabit it and enjoy it. So our whole idea of aesthetic contemplation in a beautiful place like Sea Ranch is made possible by modern infrastructure that allows the safety and all the other artificial conveniences. It's the truth. It was very different when the Native American people lived here and there were grizzly bears everywhere. Think about it. You would have not gone out of your house alone ever. You would have gone out at certain times. You would have known when to avoid them. There were other, you know, there were a whole set of dangers in countryside. So we need, what I think we forget that. We think, oh, we're living here and it's peaceful and it's quiet. Well, it's only living here peaceful and quiet because you're part of this vast system of global, you know, technological advances. I guess what we're advocating overall is that one needs to just start talking and thinking about that and thinking, well, are there ways within those systems to actually lessen the load? But one has to first be aware of the fact that we're connected. This is not an unconnected place. This is a very linked place. And the Native American cultures that preceded us 250 years ago were not. You know, they were dependent on the land in a very different way than we are. And they had a very different, so we can learn from them to some extent. But it's not probably the direction we're going to go fully unless we understand the way they lived and the way we live and then start saying, well, what, you know, how can we lighten our load? Where are the places we can lighten our load? Because we have to begin with where we're at. And I think a lot of what was happening in the early 60s with Larry Halpin and others was a bit romantic and a little fantastical. You know, people were thinking, well, we can actually reject modern civilization and go back to the land and live that way. And we know what happened with most of the communal experiments in Northern California. They didn't last. They didn't work because they weren't aware of the degree of dependence and interrelationship with cities, with capitalism, with political structures. So if it's done today, it's going to be done differently. There's going to be a different awareness than you had in the early 1960s. I think a much more sanguine awareness of how you can create a wonderful creative place, but not be as, you know, almost kind of joyfully naive the way Larry was able to be in 1963. That is not possible today. We know too much about our interweavings, and we know too much about the attempts, like I just said, to just totally break away and do it on your own. It just doesn't work. It doesn't happen. So that's why we're encouraging discussion and thought. It takes so much to start learning about all these systems and the intertwining of the systems with Sea Ranch in order to even begin to understand how can we lighten the load we place upon the earth.
Quickly along those lines, I think this idea of this landscape as unbuilt, as you put it in that good question, or unspoiled, is an illusion produced by very good design. And this is a highly, highly, highly designed and engineered landscape that produces the illusion through its intelligence of being untouched or unspoiled. And that's just to follow on those points that you made, which are, I think, really good ones.
To follow on that one more step very quickly, you talked about the lightening the load. The most quoted phrase about Sea Ranch is living lightly on the land. In the last 10 years or so, I argued with Larry that we really needed to change that from living on the land to living with the land. Yeah, that we are a part of it, and we have to see it that way, not just imagine we're setting down on it. Yeah. He didn't disagree, but he never changed the title.
Okay, George. Thank you.
I just have a asking for your comments. We're celebrating the 50-year mid-century of Sea Ranch, and today we've seen wonderful images and planning things which were initially started 50 years ago. And the images that we've seen, we've been looking at up here, are those initial buildings were designed for this place, etc. Time has been going on, a lot of construction's been going on, it's moved up the coast, and I just wonder what your honest opinion is of how that how we've moved up through the iconic structures up to what we do in living on the land right now, and I trust you've had a chance to look at what's been developed from that early start, and I just wonder what you think about how it's going at this time, and are we keeping those ideas close? Thank you.
Great question, Linda.
Okay, I'll be the one to stick my neck out here because I'll be saying what we've all been talking about, and that is, I have to say there were places up in the north end of Sea Ranch where I would look around and I could be in Contra Costa County in suburban San Francisco, suburban East Bay. And I think that's unfortunate. That's an extreme statement. But I think part of it has to do with the subtlety of some of the things I showed, how roads were put in, how houses were sited, how the loss of the connection to the from the meadows down to where the edge was. So George, wherever you went, it's not what it was. There's a real difference from the south end as you move up to the north end. That said, there are many in any of those places. There are many gorgeous, wonderful spots where one can appreciate what it means to be at Sea Ranch. They are much less in number. And I don't think it had to be because it's not about the number of units, kinds of things that have been talked about. It could have been the same number of people, but with less grandiose square footage, et cetera, and just the subtlety of how places were sited And some, and that includes beyond just, there were some wonderful, there's some wonderful individual buildings up there, but it has more to do with the loss of quality, I would say, in the development of how roads were placed, how things were graded, this very artificial landscape in a way which respected, it was about designing with this place and what it was. And I think that's what Larry was about, that's what McCarg was about, that was what all of the leaders of that era, they were saying, we've got to understand how a landscape works in order that we can insert ourselves, because we're inserting ourselves anyway. But we want to insert ourselves understanding the implications of how we do it and hold on to as much as we can of that wonderful experience that may exist in a place like that does exist in a place like this. But it's definitely been lost. A lot of it has been lost as you move north, I think. And I think I'm speaking for all of my colleagues, because this has been a constant conversation as we've been moving around. And anyone want to argue with me?
Again, probably a sore subject to bring up, but when was the last time Larry was not your neighbor but was your landscape architect? When was he dismissed by the developer? Yes.
69, right?
69. Okay, so there's 40 years where the pattern has not relied on that genius that formed it. So we have 10 years of the things we love so dearly, and again, you know, there is exactly what you were saying. We went for a walk at lunch along this edge right now, and we could have been anywhere else I've ever been on the planet, not at Sea Ranch.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, in some ways, it's kind of a miracle. It's continued as well as it has. I mean, sure, it sort of fell apart, you know, at a certain point, but not totally. And people still seem to have the same sentiments about it that we can return to and build on. So,
yeah,
because all those many of those wonderful spots have not been lost.
Mm-hmm. And I would actually say that at this point, our charge is to figure out how to make wonderful places out of what's here, not to worry what might have happened.
Yeah.
And so that's actually what we've been trying to do with the Commons Landscape Committee, is to get in and understand what landscape there really is here, and then how to make further advantage of that. I'm not saying we're there yet, and I'm not disputing the idea for more vigorous examination of the landscape than we've been doing through these workshops. And our visual analyses, but it seems to me the challenge for the future is not one of wondering why it didn't happen, but of saying, okay, now what can we do from here? And finding different ways of institutionally connecting with it, different kinds of programs, different ways of also imagining how one could infill. We are all afraid to think about that. Because it violates the existing plan. But I think it's absolutely right that we have to face the issue of what would be the possibilities for seeing this place expanded in a different way, and what are the ways of using it in different ways. One of the problems we have is that half of it is unoccupied half of the time, which is a not very sustainable use of resources. And, you know, my piece is too, so I'm not casting aspersions. It's a fundamental issue of resource utilization. If we used what it is that we have to its full, that would be already a major step towards a more sustainable future.
Right.
Okay, we have another question. Oh, David Littlejohn. Okay, could somebody get the mic down to David's level? Great. Or I should say up to David's level.
Got really. Me? Yeah. I don't know how many of you have looked at the book that Jackie mentioned called The Barn, which is a great book about
George,
this very
Holmesy
building.
George brought some up here.
And
so here
one of the things that totally flabbergasted me as I read that was that it took 10 years to get this thing, this building in semi-ruin, put back into shape so it could be used. And much of that time was spent fighting with the community that didn't want anything to be here. They didn't want any gatherings. They didn't want any public meetings. They didn't want anything changed. They were worried about the traffic. They were worried about the parking. They were worried about the bright lights of people coming here to a building that holds about 150, 200 people and now cannot be used at night at all. If they had that much trouble getting this building put back together, the things I've heard today, a conference center, an education establishment up by the airport, a main street north of the lodge, the fight they're having now about trying to double the size of the lodge. They probably had a fight about moving the golf course from 9 to 18 holes. I mean, anytime anybody has tried to add anything, the Verdant View project where somebody wants to add a grocery and general store to the lumber yard and the TSRA building and the fire, I don't know what else is up there, but that's semi-zoned for business, but it's never been used for it except for the lumber yard. And here, these phenomenal buildings that Christopher showed us, they're going to pass the design committee?
That's a good question.
Are any of these things going to be approved by a population that is not going to get any younger and probably not much more forward-seeing and non-conservative as far as Sea Ranch? They liked Sea Ranch, as we've heard, the way it was when they moved in. They liked it when they read about it for the first time. They don't want a grocery store. They don't want a coffee shop. They don't want a clinic. God knows they don't want a church or school. God knows. They don't want a dormitory for students. They don't want a conference center. Think of what that would do to the town. So all of these great ideas have this great wall of Sonoma County fighting them. And I don't see, speaking just reasonably politically, how any of these great ideas are going to get past the current population, the current TSRA, or the current design committee. If anybody has an idea, maybe a revolution where you throw out the board and get a new one. But they were great fun to listen to, but I kept writing in my notes, never happened, never happened, never happened.
I wanted to say, I've been, living in the San Francisco Bay Area, I was going to wonder how many of those people were from Berkeley or from San Francisco, because that we are, I wrote an article about over 10 years ago, San Francisco in an age of reaction. And the Bay Area has been one of the most architecturally unfriendly places starting in the 80s. I actually helped create that, unfortunately, because I worked on the downtown plan for San Francisco. I wrote the preservation guidelines and the design, preserved 500 some odd buildings. It was a great thing at that time because we were tearing down a lot of buildings and there was a real fear we were going to lose San Francisco. And what we ended up doing is for a while, we fossilized San Francisco. We preserved it so much that we were scared of anything. And you mentioned a building that's going to shade another building, oh, my God, I'm going to lose sunlight. A building that's going to block part of you, no. Any parking, all the issues you bring up are totally mirrored by what happened in the Bay Area. And what I wanted to say is it's changing. And it is changing now in the Bay Area. San Francisco is a different place than it was 10 years ago and 20 years ago. There is a much more receptivity because of issues of global climate change, because of a fascination with design, because of a fascination with technology. You're getting a population, a change in attitude. It's taking a long time, but it's happening. And even Berkeley, which is going to be voting in November. Again, they're fighting about an increased density downtown Berkeley, and it's been a big struggle. I'm sure Linda has been following it, and Harrison and others. And we've been arguing, God, if you can't build a five-story buildings along San Pablo Avenue or University Avenue, where are you going to build them? And people say, well, it's not our Berkeley. That's not the way Berkeley has been. And it's ironic because Berkeley, we saw earlier slides today as the leading the flag for change in 1964 and then becoming reactionary or toward change by the 80s. So I'm seeing a change in both in San Francisco. I live in Oakland. We're seeing a bit of a change. And what brought about the change, I'll end on this, was a new young architects coming in and doing works that people went, wow, those are kind of amazing. I think the De Young Museum is a great example. I'm sure a lot of you have been to the De Young Museum. I served pro bono on, I went to about 15 community meetings throughout San Francisco. And people would say, there's a tower and we can see it. And I was like, well, since time immemorial, towers have been places that you can see. I mean, that's the kind of the idea of a tower. And they were like, well, we don't like a tower then. You know, it would be conversations like that. But then it got built, and it and a number of other buildings got built, and the attitude, people like, wow, we kind of like the De Young Museum. It's kind of cool looking. It's a kind of an amazing building. Why don't, we can have some more of those, and you really have a different climate now. It really took a few examples of buildings that are really amazing, and I think that's what could happen here too, maybe. Like, either, you know, build, you have to, you just experiment with how it can happen, but I think what you're saying is, I've lived it, I'm telling you, and I know it, yeah.
I think that your question is the key question. I think you've not just described San Francisco, you've described the entire west side of Los Angeles, for that matter, in terms of attitude towards new construction and change. So this is not a conversation that's unique to the Sea Ranch. I hope that I and others made clear that we understand we're not under any illusions about the difficulty, particularly in connection with design review, of bringing in some of these more forward-looking buildings. I think there is potential in the short term, before, as we wait for the kind of longer-term shift of attitude, which I think will happen here as well, that a series of small houses could actually be, could operate as Trojan horses and could sneak in some interesting ideas under cover of a Sea Ranch vernacular and a kind of architectural palette that is acceptable to people if done in the right way and the right architect is in charge. And I think over time that can begin to plant the seeds for a new appreciation for something that is more forward-looking. But look, none of us is under any illusions about how difficult this is politically. But I also think that it's a debate that's happening all over the place, not just in communities that are as unusual and unique as this one.
I love what you said about architecture, Chris, but you also said small houses, and I think the whole idea of size is a tremendous problem here and elsewhere. And I think the thing I remember coming out to review the De Young and thinking, I can't believe there's a building like this coming up in stodgy old San Francisco. You're right. I remember the whole thing coming from New York with my Eastern viewpoint again. But the fact of the matter, the other force that's completely driving San Francisco today is our soaring real estate values. And, you know, that's a big issue here, too. I mean, you've got people who want to protect what they have. You've got, why would you build a small house and sell it when you could build a big house and sell it? I mean, you know,
but if you can legislate everything, if you can legislate, you know, the design and the color of the shingles and the stain. No, but you can legislate size, too. I mean, there are things that you control. Design review doesn't just mean the architectural style. It can mean the size. It can mean all of those things. So there's ways to think about.
You have to understand.
You know, constraint can be.
They're valuable.
And constraint can be defined in a number of ways. I mean, constraint can be in the what kind of covering or what kind of plants you can put outside your house. It can also be what, you know, how many square feet you can build. So, yeah.
I would just say that with all due respect to David, and I have huge respect for David and for the article of his that has just been published about the Sea Ranch on Architectural Record website yesterday. Speaking of the architecture record being the record, I think he and others are mischaracterizing the situation. I mean, you went from the Barn Book and that incredible controversy of many years ago, which was a controversy, but not all the community was opposed to it. It was some of the community that were opposed to it. It was, you know, you characterized it in very large, broad statements of they wanted this or they wouldn't have this or they won't. And that's not where we are. And I don't think that where we are either is that the design committee is unwilling to consider interesting and suggestive projects. In fact, in my own view anyway, we've published several of them. The design review has passed in the book, and there are others that we didn't. And so, all things are political. Politics is always difficult. But I do not feel comfortable with accepting the characterization of this as a completely negative community towards change. Now, I may be wrong. I may be inherently positive towards what things might be, which would be another bias. But I don't think the situation is quite as you describe it. And I just wanted to get that on the record.
Okay. Thank you. That's a very good question, a real question. Thanks, David. Okay. Another question.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Abel. I'm a civil engineer, and I practice structural engineering in San Francisco, right by the De Young Museum. And I live and work there, but my parents have a home here. They live here full time. It's the Binker with the addition up in the forest that you guys saw yesterday on the tour. But anyway, I'm a long-time architectural record subscriber, but I read the Dwell. Yes. Big fan of yours, Kathleen. I read your pieces every month. But I happened to read the Dwell article on the Ramirez residence, and I found it really refreshing and appropriate. And so I'm curious if you guys have any thoughts on the broadening of material use and textures in the built environment within Sea Ranch.
Good. Okay. Who wants it? Will?
Yes, seeing I've had the privilege of being the house guest with my wife, I find it totally refreshing. Again, it meets all the rules. It is about the nature, about the textures. It's about how it weathers, how it conforms in many different ways. It's using the technology of today and glass and detailing and other things. And I find it really refreshing. Like I say, that gave me great optimism and gives me great optimism about the future of this community. They are willing to look at things differently, and it did get through, and the Ramirez say it wasn't all that challenged. It was very collegial.
I think it sounds like the design committee is very increasingly open here. I think one of the problems with design committees, and you have to have them in a place like this if you want to maintain some kind of integrity, but it gets to be a sort of check-the-box thing. You know, will it weather? Is it gray? Is it, you know, and it makes it easy for houses to slide in that maybe they check the boxes, but they're really not. The architecture is not of very high quality, and I think that's one of the things. It's not just the siting of it, of some of these houses, as Linda was suggesting, but it's part of what's disappointing for some of us who took this walk today at lunch, for example. So I think that there's a way you really want your design committee, as I think it is, sounds like it is, to really be open exactly to what you're saying, to different materials and different ideas, but that reflect the spirit of what Sea Ranch has been and what it wants to be going forward.
One last comment. One of the reasons for the success is the original CCNRs require that there are design professionals on that committee. They are that group. That makes a great difference. So it doesn't become so much about I like, I don't like, but it becomes a really good critical professional critique. And that's to your credit.
Okay, I am mindful of the time. The time we said we were going to stop, but I see at least two questions here. It's a little unclear. So if you don't mind, I'd like to allow two more questions, and then we can retire. If you can't stand it, go out. So, Dibby. Tyler, Dibby Tyler.
I'm Dibby Tyler. I'm a full-time resident, past board member at Sea Ranch. And I have a very general question. It's kind of my observation that if a place becomes well-known and popular and successful financially, the values go up and the things that brought people there to begin with begin to disappear. And what I'd like to know is examples of other communities in the United States that have been able to maintain character while being very successful financially.
Yeah, well, that answers that question. That's a short answer. Christopher, did you
It's
have
a
something?
Very shrewd question, actually. Really shrewd. And I think I can only think of examples that support your skepticism, your question. I think about the Pearl District, for example, in Portland, which is planned as well as any neighborhood in the country and yet has had the life leached out of it because of it's become a victim of its own success. So I don't know that I can think of a place that has been managed to reverse that cycle. There are a lot of examples of places that fall victim to it, and you're right, absolutely.
I'd agree. I think it's almost, it seems as if positive publicity is always going to lead to, you know, higher prices and desire, because it leads to demand, and so that's a real catch-22, isn't it?
Well, one thing I'll say is that you could think of it in simple economic terms. If the prices are going up, there's one way to deal with that, and that's increase the supply. And that means more units, more multifamily units, a different kind of approach to density. So that means opening it up to more people and different kinds of units, smaller units, things that can be more affordable from the beginning.
The thing that supports that idea is what sounds like a kind of a you didn't have to be a wealthy person to buy in Sea Ranch in the beginning. Is that right, Donlin?
Yeah.
And I think you must be a wealthy person to buy in Sea Ranch today. Am I right about that? Maybe not.
It's heading that way, right?
It seems like it's heading that way, which is why it supports what Chris is suggesting. And obviously you want to manage density and population growth, but to offer people different kinds of accommodation here across a range of sizes is one way to attract a more diverse community.
Can I make one comment?
Okay, we're running over time, but
okay, just one little one. Sea Ranch is not, in terms of transportation, very sustainable and never will be with a 10-mile stretch. But we do have probably one of the nation's highest per capita rate of Prius owners here.
Oh, that's good. I think that's right. Okay, one last question. Amy?
Perhaps this will be a good ending question. I first want to thank all of you. You've given us so much of your wisdom and expertise and a lot of things to think about. But I also, in homage to Larry and Anna, who I've been dancing with for over 10 years, want to respond to the R part of the RSVP, which is resources. And I look out at this room of 150, 200 people, and I wanted to know what the next steps following today are and really, like, turn it back on them. There are so many talented, smart people who love this place, and I have a feeling a lot of the answers to the questions that have been raised today can be found in this room.
You know, I'm whether sure they
it's
think
like,
so.
Yeah, whether it's the bench committee or the, you know, the bike path committee or the grocery store committee or whatever it is. So I'm curious if there are some plans or discussions about what will happen after today.
Thank you. And thank you all. So, what? That's a question?
That was a question.
Amy, it is definitely the case that there is, as Jackie has said, there is a follow-on workshop kind of forum that will take place for members of the community. It has been scheduled for February. It's not probably going to be February now, but somewhat later. But there's absolutely a part of our program is to have a follow-on wherein people get engaged in trying to think through what these issues are. And part of it will be an agenda developed from this meeting.
Okay. Thank you all. There is... Thanks to our panel. You were great. You were great. And thanks all for being so patient. And we can continue. I know you'll continue talking with all of us outside the barn. There is your reward waiting, wine and cheese and stuff, fruit. So go and relax a little bit.